This is the Drive and Dish Podcast. Talking about NBA news, stats, and fantasy. To start it off, it's Tim Tompkins.
And like PJ Tucker's a player that you can put on Kyrie Irving. You can also put him on Kevin Love, and you can also put him on LeBron James. Like, that kind of player defensively is incredibly valuable.
Kevin Rayfuse.
To be good, but I don't want to be stuck in the limbo of mediocrity. I don't want to gamble that maybe one day there's a Harden trade out there. I don't want to gamble that some team is going to be stupid and let a Steve Nash walk out the door and go to Phoenix the way Dallas did, where you stumble upon a superstar.
And Justin Kuzak.
A lot of the times, from my understanding, is close games are won by the coach calling those inbound plays and drawing up a quick sideline play for him.
Well, if you like that, you're going to love this.
Well, if anything, this is the point where we all sit there and get real excited.
Let's do this!
Let's go.
So we're just going to preface this off by saying, yes, we know we are extremely, extremely late between just the midseason previews and all other things. We never actually gave this a true discussion, but many of you have requested it. We listen to our listeners. Let's talk dunk contest, shall we?
Okay. Will Barton was robbed.
Will Barton
was
robbed.
Yeah, I mean, it's... One of the coolest things I thought was that Steve Nash soccer pass to Andre Drummond.
You're such a homer.
Well, maybe either way, for one, it was really cool to see. And for two, it was nice to see Steve
After
Nash.
After they tried it 16 times.
Well, I actually only saw the highlights.
Oh, okay. They messed up like Nash. And it's, I mean, that's a really hard thing to do in soccer. Mm-hmm. So like he messed up like four or five times and then they tried it a different way and it kind of worked eventually.
All right, well, way to take my thunder.
Well, no, it was my favorite Steve Nash involved dunk related dunk contest is still the one that where he went off his head to was that Amari who was in that dunk contest that year?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was awesome, just the timing of all that. But anyways, the big news of the night was obviously Zach LaVine and Aaron Gordon, and I have trashed the dunk contest on the show many times because it frankly has just been terrible in recent years, but this year was the best in a long, long time. I actually thoroughly enjoyed the dunk contest this year. Zach LaVine and Aaron Gordon, what a duel. I mean, I don't think there's any question to me that Aaron Gordon had dunk of the night. Just overall best one. The one where, I mean, he was fully sitting in the air, went all the way under his legs. Like, they said he would have won third place in the Olympics in terms of high jump if that was a tie, like a recorded event. Jeez. That's incredible.
And I thought the one where the Orlando Magic mascot was rotating and Aaron Gordon went and grabbed the ball out of his hands while he's rotating.
On the hoverboard.
On the
quote. They're very
hoverboard.
Lucky it did not set on fire.
They are. But I thought that was really impressive as well.
Just the timing. The timing with that. Aaron Gordon was good. The theme seems to be is that everyone says that Aaron Gordon got robbed, and I definitely think he has a strong case. I mean, for me personally, I just think his last one kind of did him in.
Yeah, you know, it was kind of boring.
I think the other thing, too, is you know,
but I think
there's a strong argument that Aaron Gordon won it. I'm not saying he didn't, but the thing with LaVine is I think how effortless LaVine makes it look takes away from how good it is.
That Canadian that came in and did the scorpion dunk right after them showed both of them up.
Well, yeah.
Some random dude in jeans. I mean, I don't know him. He's apparently
well,
a very
a YouTube
popular guy.
Dunker. Yeah. I mean, if you can find better dunkers, if you go on, like, there are guys who literally make a living dunking.
Like Tim,
I mean, of course they're
he
better.
He grabbed the ball, went around, and dunked the ball behind
right,
him.
Right. Yeah, I saw that.
I think we're talking about the wrong things, personally.
And my feelings on that, Kevin, that you were talking about, you know, whether or not he had the best dunk of the night, I agree that his last one being was what made him lose.
But it's because he couldn't score more than 50 is why he lost, I think.
Okay.
Like, he could have...
But I don't think it should have gotten that far. I thought that one where he took the... Where he jumped, he took the ball underneath both his legs while he's sitting in midair. Like, that should have just won.
But LaVine pretty much jumped from the free throw line and still windmilled it.
I don't think that's as impressive. I thought that...
Jumping
I
from
thought
the free
that
throw
that
line?
Aaron Gordon one was one of the best dunks by an NBA player that I have ever seen in my entire life. What? It was just... Oh my God, amazing.
Oh yeah, no, I completely agree. I think Aaron Gordon won. I just think jumping from, I mean, he was a little bit in front of the free throw line, but there's something to be said about jumping from that far away.
No, it's incredibly impressive.
Yeah.
I'm not arguing that.
Yeah.
But I just think Aaron Gordon's was like, Oh my God. I also really appreciated the fact that it wasn't nearly as gimmicky. You remember Dwight Howard, like with the Superman thing coming out of the
phone
booth.
I don't know. When they walked out, the way they walked out, I was like, all right.
Right.
Oh, come on. But it's all, but the dunk contest is showmanship. Like, that's what it's for. That's why people win. Blake Griffin didn't win the dunk contest that year because he had the best dunk. He was basically jumped over a car, and because it's showmanship.
What I was
going
to say, you could definitely, it was funny to watch, like, who was it? It might have been Will Barton, but it was one of the first dunks they dunked, and the crowd was like, ah, cool. And then LaVine comes out and dunks it, and because all of his teammates were right there on the sideline where the camera could pick him up, it just looks like their reaction was so much more because they all got up. They had their phones out. They're
right, I saw that.
Falling on each other out of excitement, which apparently is a thing. I've never been like so excited that I have to fall into somebody.
Dude, I don't know, man. It's just got to hold you up sometimes.
Well, just wait until dude's night later.
Oh, boy. Anyway,
I'm just saying,
that is,
we are not talking about the right
that
thing.
That is some process language, but you're listening to the Drive and Dish NBA podcast. My name is Kevin Rayfuse. Joining me to my left, my co-host, Tim Tompkins.
The ball does not lie or take good pictures.
Man, behind the boards, keeping us honest as always, our producer Justin Kuzar.
I have a whole bunch of tweets right here, but I'm only going to read one and then we'll get into the rest of them because this is what I think we should have been talking about. Man, ESPN only showed 3 of Dame Lillard's 51 points against the Warriors. They're wrong for that. Hashtag snub that.
They really only showed 3 of his 51 points in the highlights?
The Trailblazers beat the Warriors last night, 137-105. Damian Lillard dropped 51 points, and, like, ESPN didn't give a crap.
Damian Lillard, I get the feeling it's going to go on just that second half. You guys snubbed me from the All-Star Watch Me War and be a fire-breathing dragon.
Well, you saw the lyrics from that track that he dropped, right? And the last line in it, I'm not going to try and rap it. I don't even remember exactly, but to paraphrase, it was like, remember what happened last time you snubbed me? Game 6.
So CJ McCollum, these are the tweets after his 51 win, and I was like, these are just so amazing. We have to talk about these. He tweeted, great team win tonight coming out of break. 50-piece McNugget with barbecue sauce on the side. Hashtag Rip City. Then Noah Vonleh tweeted, when your boy putting up 50 on they head, great way to start the second. And then Damian Lillard got tweeted by someone, said, they're finally calling you Dame Lillard on ESPN, blah, blah, blah. He said, they're finally starting to see you. And Damian Lillard responds, I don't care what they see.
Yeah,
you've pissed him off.
He feels a little bit slighted.
Just a tad.
I'm not kidding. I think that if the Trailblazers make it into the playoffs, that he should absolutely be considered for MVP.
Absolutely.
And then it brings up the whole discussion. You know, what are we basing the MVP off of? The best player, the most important player, yada, yada, yada.
You know, this is exactly the stance you took against James Harden last year.
Well, while that's true, I feel like
the Rockets would have been in a better position than...
Yes. Okay. Like, if you look at the Trailblazers, you know, where would they be without Damian Lillard?
Oh,
whereas you look
terrible.
At the Rockets last year, Trevor Ariza, Dwight Howard, like, they had a team.
Do you think CJ McCollum's the most improved?
I mean, I think you gotta... I don't know. I mean, when you're looking at most improved, is it also the player that got the most minutes?
Right.
Because it's always been part of my problem with the award as well is this player was getting 15 minutes last season. They're getting 35 this season. So, of course, the numbers are better. I want to take an actual look at the per 36s of players. But, I mean, he should absolutely be in the running, sure. Also, like, the dude shoots, like, 41%.
Which isn't terrible.
It ain't good.
I mean, hey, when you're I mean,
but you're scoring, like, 25 points a game. That's fine. Mm-hmm. But people just hear that and they don't take into account the efficiency or lack of efficiency.
I think anything above 40% isn't that bad. It's when it creeps under that it starts to be like, all right.
Yeah, but how many players does it even creep under? I just think if you're going to look at a player as, oh my God, look at the season he's having. If you're a guard, if you're shooting less than 45%, that it's, you know, you're having a good season. Yes, is it this phenomenal, oh my God, season? No, the reason why you're scoring this much is because you're putting up 15 shots a game.
It is probably statistically true. The more shots you take, the more shots you will make.
Right, right.
that is true.
So every...
Hey, Rondo, before you get into that, Rondo, stat line a couple of nights ago, 24 points, 9 assists, 15 boards, and 5 steals.
Nice.
Had nothing to do with what we were talking about, but I was thinking... It's impressive.
Okay. That is impressive indeed.
Well, every week we like to give a shout out to one of our listeners for hitting us up and leaving us a review.
This week's review comes from Australia. It's by Inixan. I'm sorry if I said that wrong. It's Inixan. So, Inixan?
Inixan.
Inixan?
Like Inax.
Inixan?
Inaxan?
I don't know. Inaxan. Either way, the name of the review, it's a 5-star review. The title is First Off the Bench. And the review says, recently started listening to and am really enjoying it. Parentheses, must be because I am Australian. Seems to be a lot of Aussie fans. Close parentheses. I was looking for a replacement for the starters who I've grown tired of. Am very pleased with my decision. Out of the guys off the street, parentheses, not the Lows or Woges, these guys would be the top podcast.
Hey, really appreciate that. That's very nice. Long discussions actually with a listener that hit us up on Facebook recently about the difference between our podcast and some other podcasts. And we're talking about, like, you know, the Dunked On, the Real GM podcast, and how the information that they're giving is incredibly valuable. It's incredibly smart, but it's, you know, it's really dry. And so it kind of depends what you're looking for in a podcast. So I think you brought this up a while ago too, Justin, where you said, you can understand why people used to compare us to the starters, because we sort of have that same sort of vibe about the show.
Yeah, where we're just hanging out, talking basketball. We're not going to be able to break any crazy news, and because we're not in the locker room.
We aren't reporters.
Yeah, I think we're really honest about what we are, and that's we don't cover the NBA professionally full-time. I mean, we don't. We all have different full-time jobs working in respective radio fields. We just all happen to really like basketball.
With access to a sweet studio.
Yep.
Yeah.
And that pays dividends. Also, thank you everybody who added us on Instagram as well. The Instagram account that we launched last week, a huge success so far, and we really appreciate you. If you haven't done it yet, you can find us on Instagram at @DriveAndDishNBA.
But why don't we get some news?
Tell me something I do not know. Do not know.
Now. If you do not know the present, how can you claim to know the future?
Now on NBA News on the Drive and Dish podcast.
We need to know now.
All right, first in your news, Anderson Varejao has agreed to sign with the Warriors. Jakar Sampson is finalizing a 2-year deal with the Denver Nuggets. Sampson was released by the 76ers at the deadline to create a roster spot. The Sixers were hoping to re-sign him. Apparently, Jeff Hornacek was a big proponent of the Washington Wizards trading for Markieff Morris. The Wizards actually talked to Hornacek before they went and traded for Morris. It's rumored that D'Angelo Russell is going to finally start for the Lakers during the remainder of the season, which is good. And lastly in your news, David Lee signed with the Mavericks for $2.1 million. He was waived by the Celtics on Friday. And that's your news for this week.
Something.
So it's finally coming. I got to see my Phoenix Suns at the very beginning of the year play the Lakers, the Kobe-less Lakers, unfortunately.
You did.
But I get to see them coming up here soon, March 4th, actually. I'm going to go see them play Orlando.
How did you find your tickets?
Well, I haven't got them yet. The part of the reason I haven't got them yet is because SeatGeek, if you go to SeatGeek.com or you download their app, what you can do is you can put in your email address. And when those seats lower in price, they're actually going to shoot me out an email for it.
I'm actually looking at it right now because when you were talking about that, I got interested. Mm-hmm. So I have it up right now. And it's really cool because you can pick the different spots, like seats in the top level are like $50. For the exact game, the Suns Magic game, and you can sit lower level for like $130.
Yeah, which isn't bad at all.
No,
I mean basically the way that SeatGeek works is they're like Kayak. They aggregate all the different ticket sellers across the internet. They put them all in one place, kind of like Kayak does for hotels or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then they color code each section or all the tickets and tell you green's good, red's not good, yellow's so so.
I was wondering what that was all about. And I guess the cool thing about this, too, is they can do it for concerts as well. So it's not just sports games.
So you got sporting events, concerts, all that good stuff. And you can just do it all off their app. It's free for your iPhone, your Android.
And one thing SeatGeek does different than other apps and other ticketing services is that they show you the whole price up front. So that $50 you
change.
Just saw
it stays
right there,
at.
That's the final checking out price. Well, when you go to Ticketmaster or you go to a venue site directly to buy a ticket, they'll say the ticket's $40. When you go to check out, it's $60. Trust me, I know this happens to me with the Jacksonville Giants all the damn time, and that's why I don't ever get my tickets through Ticketmaster. Full disclosure, SeatGeek is our first official sponsor, so this is what, two and a half years in the making?
Yeah,
finally,
two and a half
we made
years.
It.
We're here.
It really means a lot to us. We really appreciate SeatGeek. Basically, what's important right here is you can help support us and the Drive and Dish podcast and everything that we've been trying to do for you guys by going to your app store, downloading the free SeatGeek app. Go to the settings tab and click add a promo code. Mm-hmm. Enter the promo code DISH, like Drive and Dish, and then you'll get a $20 rebate after you've made your first purchase. So no, you don't need to go and buy tickets now, but go and download the app now. Go to settings, put in the promo code DISH, and then once you do buy your tickets for the for some playoff games, for some concert tickets, you're automatically going to get $20 back.
And joining us now on the line, we got a special guest on the program. It's actually his third time on the show. It's pretty awesome. We've got Keith Smith. Make sure you follow him on Twitter at Keith Smith NBA. He's a contributor for Real GM, talking Orlando Magic, and of course the salary cap. Keith, thanks for coming back on, man.
Hey, no problem, guys. Happy to join you. Always happy to talk the cap and NBA in general with you.
So first up, well, let's get right into it. Trade deadline. Your team, the Orlando Magic, making some serious moves. It actually happened a few days before the deadline, but Tobias Harris going to the Pistons, the Magic in return, getting Brandon Jennings and Ersan Ilyasova. You know, what were your immediate reactions to that trade?
You know, I think it was a case where it was time for the Magic had to do something. They realized that the current mix wasn't working. The guys that they had, probably too much duplication on the roster, I think, is the biggest thing. They're really too loaded down at the wing position. Harris and Aaron Gordon were kind of overlapping a little. I know they had played them together some, but it wasn't working out great. It was time, really, they had to do something, and I think the ultimate choice was Harris was the guy who needed to go. I think the biggest thing that happened was Rob Hennigan looked at it and said, you know what, that contract was maybe a mistake. Maybe we put the eggs in the wrong basket, and it's time to move on from that and correct it as best we can and move forward. And I know they're getting beat up a lot because they didn't get a first-round pick when some of the other deals that went down closer to the deadline seemed like they were a little bit better for those teams. But I don't think the Magic did as badly as some are making it out to be. I think they did okay. I think it was a case where they really had to move on and clear the deck, get rid of that salary. And the two guys coming back, it's not like they're nobodies. Ilyasova and Jennings can both play. I think they'll help the team the rest of the way this year. I think Jennings especially is going to help the Magic by just kind of letting Elfrid Payton take a little bit of a breather. Whether Jennings ends up starting or he just plays minutes, he played a lot of the crunch time minutes and a lot in the overtime down the stretch. So it really gave Payton kind of that, takes that pressure off, lets him develop a little bit. They always say point guard's the hardest position for a rookie to come in and learn. He's not a rookie this year, obviously, but he's still struggling as a young player. Offensively, he's still pretty limited. So I think that'll help. I think Ilyasova is basically a replacement for Fry on the roster. A little cheaper, a little bit better of a rebounder, maybe a little bit better of a defender. So, yeah, it's tough to give up Tobias Harris, but I think it was the right move in the end.
Keith, I wanted to bring it back to something you said a little bit ago. You said that fans or people in general were talking about how they thought the Magic could have gotten a first-round pick out of it or something like that. And I saw a report saying that the Magic actually said they didn't want a first-round pick because they felt like they were too young to begin with. Do you agree with the Magic thinking? Is that true? Is that why they maybe shied away from a first-round pick?
Yeah, I don't think anyone's turning down a first-round pick if it's offered. So, but I don't think that's what they were pushing for. I think they did want to bring in vets, and I think they really wanted to clear absolutely as much cap space as possible going into the summer. I think that was a big goal with these two moves from both the Harris and the Fry trades. And I think they wanted to take back as little long-term salary. And even though a pick is, you know, it's bound by the rookie scale and it's fairly low money, I don't think they wanted that pick on the books either. So I think it was get a couple veterans who can help this year. Maybe they can help long-term. Jennings and Skiles apparently have a great relationship from their previous time together. So that could be a long-term thing where Jennings ends up re-upping in Orlando this summer. So I think there's probably some truth to that not being the target, but I don't know that it was on the table either.
I mean, I got to be honest with you, Keith. I think that the Orlando Magic trade deadline was complete and utter failure. You know, giving away Tobias Harris and Channing Frye for essentially two expiring contracts and a second round pick just to me isn't a win whatsoever. And, you know, so you mentioned it before, they wanted cap space going into the summer. They should have around $50 million in cap space, which is great, but this is also probably the worst summer to have cap space because everybody has cap space, and pretty much whoever you get, you're probably going to be overpaying. you know, can the Magic lure free agents this summer? Like, is that a free agent destination when everybody has money?
Yeah, I think it is. I think, you know, we've seen it in the past when they I know it's going kind of to the Wayback Machine, but they did get Grant Hill and Tracy McGrady once upon a time. Tim Duncan over the last few years, as he's kind of been doing almost his in-career memoirs, kind of mentioned that it was close that he was coming to Orlando, too, when he was a free agent at that same period. So I think they can. It's, you know, a lot of players live here in the area as their kind of year-round home or their off-season home. The weather, obviously, is something a lot of players talk about as being a big motivator for them. The money is pretty huge. They can, you know, no state tax in Florida, so that's a big difference, and they're going to be able to pay. So I think they have the ability to lure a free agent. I don't know that it's going to be the top guy like a Kevin Durant, but there's a lot of rumors now about Al Horford, who, you know, he went to school at the University of Florida. He's still active in the area in a lot of ways. There's been a lot of talk of him coming back. There's been some talk of Joakim Noah coming this way to play with Horford and close it out and be a depth piece for the Magic. So I think they can get some big names. And the other thing is that's good is, right, it doesn't always have to be a free agent. Having the cap space allows them to be really active in the trade market and really go after things. And, yeah, everyone's going to have space, but not everyone's going to have quite that much space. So I think that is definitely a benefit for them.
Well, speaking of his cap space, you know, you got a guy on the books already who's coming up and is going to be a free agent. That's Evan Fournier. And there were a lot of questions about whether they wanted to make the long-term investment in him going forward. Do you think now, with that more flexible cap situation, that they maybe do make the investment in Evan Fournier?
Yeah, I do. I think basically what they did was they were in a spot where they're going to have to choose Harris or Fournier, and I think they chose Fournier. He gives them a little bit more versatility on the wing. He can play both shooting guard and small forward, where Harris was really locking more into the small forward spot. He just struggles defensively against the bigger power forwards. So I think it was really that was the choice between Fournier and Harris, and I think Harris going out put it way up that Fournier is probably going to be back, whether that's back as a starter or a six-man type off the bench. I think that highly increases those chances.
And with Tobias Harris now also out of the mix, you know, it kind of opens up a lot more playing time for Aaron Gordon. We know, you know, one of their biggest, well, their highest draft pick in recent memory, I should say. You know, how important do you think that was to Orlando's staff?
Yeah, I think that's huge. I think it was, you know, it's kind of funny because people have painted it as, oh, Gordon broke out in the dunk contest, and now they're going to play him a ton. They were already playing him before that. Now it's just going to be that many more minutes. And it's going to be important for him to play and not have to look over his shoulder every time that he makes a mistake and those kind of things, play with confidence, get out there and kind of do his thing, run up and down the floor, be an athlete, be active defensively. He was terrific against the Mavericks, especially in the late game on defense. He was really active, making a lot of plays. He's obviously got, you know, crazy bounce, can jump out of the gym. So I think that's big. I think the other kind of piece that a lot of folks aren't talking about quite as much, it frees up even more minutes for Mario Hezonja, too. Because really where Harris was playing a lot of the small forward spot, that's probably where Hezonja is most comfortable right now, is either there or shooting guard. So when you had Harris, Gordon, Fournier, Hezonja, Oladipo, that whole wing position was very crowded. Now you've cleared that up, and Hezonja is going to see even more minutes going down the stretch here for the remainder of this season as well.
And that was what I was going to ask you is, I guess now with this move, are the Magic like, I guess, is the feeling that they're going for the playoffs? Like, I saw, I think of what was a Orlando piece, which was titled, "The Magic Are Officially Playoff Contenders Now."
Yeah, I don't know that I'd go quite that far. that they're playoff contenders. They've got a lot of ground to make up, but I think that is the goal.
Okay.
Scott Skiles has said repeatedly, I have, you know, I'm here to win games. I, you know, that's my job. I'm going to try to win. And I don't think with him, that's just coach speak. I think he really believes that, and I think the fact that they're going to give minutes to Jennings and Ilyasova, that's going to push. That's a playoff move. That's not a long-term development move. Now, if they go on another 4 or 5 game losing streak and they fall further out, and then all of a sudden you start seeing guys like Jennings and Ilya Sova not getting as many minutes, and more minutes are going to Payton and Napier and the other young guys, then I think that's obviously a change in direction. But I think over the next probably 2-3 weeks, they're going to do everything they can to try to bank as many wins and make up that ground and get back in it for the 8th seed.
You know, speaking of trying to make the playoffs, watching the Magic a bit, it seems like their offense just absolutely dies in the 4th quarter. And will Brandon Jennings be able to help in that area?
I think he helps big time with the spacing. It's with Payton, teams don't guard him. They play off him. They drop into the lane, which kind of mucks things up for Gordon and Oladipo trying to get to the hoop. That was really a problem where Harris plays a kind of more of a mid-range game. He just didn't have a lot of space to work with. So I think Jennings, well, he's not Steph Curry by any means. He's not, you know, a true knockdown shooter. He's at least respectable. He's a guy that teams need to step out on in defense. So I think that's going to help their spacing quite a bit. You could even see it in the overtime last night. They went right to Jennings. You know, point guard hasn't even, you know, probably had one practice with the team. And there he is out there in overtime last night playing the big minutes as they got the win over the Mavericks. And you could see the spacing was just different. You're exactly right. This team struggles to score, which is why some question trading away one of their scorers. But I think it actually everyone's going to fit better and slot into better spots in the lineup. And I think that is going to help a lot.
Well, that's actually what I was just about to ask you. So they brought Jennings in, and obviously they have Elfrid Payton, and you said that it's going to give Payton some resting minutes. But is Jennings coming in going to hurt Payton or Oladipo's minutes at all? I mean, I just feel like, or have trouble having them all play, I guess, an equal amount of minutes.
Yeah, I think what you're going to see is, I don't think you're going to see Oladipo at the point anymore this year, as long as Jennings is playing, which Oladipo had kind of transitioned and almost being the de facto backup point guard. C.J. Watson's been hurt almost the entire season. Shabazz Napier, he had a couple moments, but he wasn't playing much. So whenever Payton was going out, Oladipo was taking those minutes. So I think that's probably going to go away. I think you'll see him almost solely play the shooting guard spot now. And I think you'll see Payton. It wouldn't surprise me if eventually Payton starts coming off the bench, even with Jennings starting over him, just to give that balance to the offense right away. And then Payton can kind of come in, be the energy guy, give him that shot in the arm when they need. They may not go that direction. Maybe they stick with Payton, a long-term starter and really still the future at point guard for the team. But I think you could see Jennings play a lot. But I think it's important because I think they were really running Payton into the ground, and he just was struggling so much in end-game situations, whether it was due to being tired or it's just not his forte. So I think it's actually going to end up helping Peyton's development, playing a little bit less and playing a little bit of a different role.
You're listening to the Driving Dish NBA podcast. Kevin Rafuse, Tim Tompkins, Justin Kuzar. Keith Smith is on the line from Real GM. Make sure you follow him on Twitter at Keith Smith NBA. Keith, so one thing that I've been noticing lately involving Vucevic really is, you know, we saw it in his game winner, but they really seem to be playing him less and less at the rim and more, you know, really expanding his game out towards the perimeter. You know, how much is Scott Skiles focused on adding that to Vucevic's game this year?
I think that's important. I think, you know, everybody wants big so you can step out and shoot, pull the other big away. And I always say, whenever I'm asked about it, the Magic almost play backwards. Their bigs are their better shooters because neither one of their guards could really shoot at all. So they play it backwards where the big step out to open up space for the guards to work down inside and, you know, do driving lanes. So I think that has been a conscious effort, and he's been knocking them down pretty consistently. It's a piece of his game he didn't have when he came into the league, so he's obviously added that through a lot of hard work and working on his shooting and those kind of things. So I think you'll see that continue. And I think now with Gordon in the starting lineup, he's obviously still more comfortable down inside, playing closer to the rim, so I think you'll see more of that. And then whether it's Fournier in the lineup with him or whoever, or if they transition to starting Ilya Sova at the power forward spot, I think you're still going to see the big step out just because the guards are not they're not your traditional outside shooters. So they like I said, they play it kind of almost backwards.
I got to tell you, speaking of bigs being able to shoot, Keith, I was watching the Utah Jazz play last night, maybe night before, and Gobert was, I don't know, he's like 12 feet away from the basket, but no one was remotely guarding him, and it didn't look like he had any inclination to shoot, even though his closest defender was 4 or 5 feet away. So yeah, I don't necessarily think that a big needs to be able to hit from the perimeter, but being able to, you know, hit that 12-foot jumper like Marcin Gortat, it could prove really valuable. So I like the direction they're heading in there. But I want to bring it back to the cap a little bit, and we're talking about how the Magic, they have $50 million in cap space coming up this summer. They also have 4 or 5 guys who are going to want extensions coming up. How are they going to balance that?
Yeah, that's the important thing. That kind of comes into play where I said I think they chose Fournier over Harris. Fournier is a restricted free agent this summer, so they've got an immediate decision to be made on him. Oladipo's is going to be eligible for an extension this summer of his rookie scale deal, whether they go that direction or they let him play it out and let him roll into restricted free agency, we'll see. I think it's more likely with a guy like Oladipo, who's a good player but not a star player, I think you're going to see teams let them get to restricted free agency, use that smaller cap hold with the cap exploding up to just give them a little bit more flexibility. I think the true stars will get locked up and sign those extensions early, but unless he's willing to take an under-market deal, I think you'll see them wait on that. And then you've got Gordon and Hezonja, obviously, further out. They've still got plenty of time on both of those two guys, as well as Elfrid Payton. But this is a challenge when you have a whole bunch of high picks kind of repeatedly, or you make trades where you bring in extra guys on rookie contracts. They all tend to come up kind of close together or in a bunch and need paid. And then you have to really decide, is this the group that's going to take me there? For example, Oklahoma City, right? They had that situation come up with Durant, Westbrook, and Harden. And obviously moved on from Harden. I don't want to bore everyone to tears by digesting another take on the Harden trade. But that's the choice you have to make. Is this my group? Is this going to be my group? Or do you start moving on from guys? The Magic, obviously, in the summer, Harris was part of that group. He's going to be here. He's going to be my guy. That's why they gave him the big contract. But as soon as the season rolled around, they started to realize maybe he's not. And that's why I think it was important that they moved away from it quickly and moved on to something else to go. So I think you'll see him use a chunk of that cap space to keep Fournier, and then the rest of it, obviously, to go and get the true star players around their young core that they really feel like they need.
How much will we really see Ilyasova play? Because I know you're talking about how they know what they want to do with Jennings, but I guess do they have a really big or have a plan for Ilyasova?
I think you're going to see him play. He played quite a bit last night. He actually ended up falling out pretty quickly. He did not play very well defensively against the Mavericks big men. But I think you're going to see him play quite a bit. It wouldn't shock me if he actually moved into the starting lineup as well and they played Gordon more at the three. But otherwise, he'll just come off the bench. He'll either be the first or second big off the bench when he does come off the bench with Jason Smith, or I could see him in that starting lineup. Again, just to give him a little more floor spacing, he is a good outside shooter, and he is a pretty good rebounder. So I think he's basically Channing Frye, but a little bit better. And I think he'll help them, whether it's coming off the bench or in the starting lineup. Isn't playing, then obviously I think it means that the season has officially gone south and they're done with pushing for the playoffs, and that means they're just going to kick minutes to the younger guys. But I think as long as things are going okay, you're going to see him play quite a bit.
So one team that's really been freeing up or using their cap flexibility, I should say, is Portland. And yeah, we saw Portland get another first rounder last night, or the trade deadline, I should say, excuse me. And it seems like they're kind of cementing that core around Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum, but just a ton of future assets going forward. And I know, you know, everybody has cap space, but they really have a ton of cap space. You know, what do you think of Portland's moves, and how well do you think they're setting themselves up for the future?
Yeah, I wrote a piece for Real GM probably about a month ago on kind of their unusual rebuild. The way they went about it. So they lost 4 starters. They had really one of the better starting fives in the entire league, had been really consistent, had been playing well, doing some things in the playoffs. And then when 4 guys walk out, you kind of think, all right, well, this team's going to go right into the tank and fall apart. full disclosure, I thought they were going to be potentially one of the worst teams in the entire league this year.
We did too. Don't worry.
Yeah, right. And they've been a huge surprise. You know, CJ McCollum's obviously he's got to be the league's breakout star. It's not even close to a guy who's just can't come out of nowhere to be, you know, really a borderline all-star talent. Damian Lillard's just as good as he's always been. So I think what they've done is the best thing that they did was they made really, really smart signings. So getting guys like Al-Farouq Aminu and Ed Davis on undervalued contracts that decline over the life of the contract each year is huge, because that means as they get older and potentially not as productive, their cap hit also lessens. And then they've got a bunch of guys on rookie scale deals that are coming up and just have been really smart about the way they've built the team and didn't spend money just to spend money. You know, I think it was for them, it could have been hard to sell to that fan base. You know, I know we're primarily used to being really successful, took a little bit of a dip, but then rebounded again back to being a successful program. And how are we, you know, now we're going to rebuild, and we're going to rebuild around Damian Lillard and see, you know, what we have. And they've just kind of stuck with the course. I think Terry Stotts done a great job. And now, like you said, they've got a ton of flexibility this summer, both in terms of space as well as assets, that I think you're going to see Portland, if they can add a piece or two, they're going to be right in the mix with a bunch of those teams in front of them in the West, which with the way they played this year isn't quite as many. And obviously, you know, them beating up on Golden State last night is, you know, that's kind of their signature win on this whole season so far. So I really love what Neil O'Shea's done up there in Portland.
Well, speaking of Portland, and I'm glad that you guys brought him up, have you noticed the difference of framing to how Portland's rebuilt in contrast to how the Sixers have rebuilt?
Yeah, I think the difference is Portland went out and got a couple guys. They went out and got, like I said, Aminu and Davis, spent a little bit of money on those guys. This year at the deadline, they obviously ate a bad contract in Anderson Varejao, who then they almost turned around and immediately waived. After Aldridge and Matthews and Lopez left, it was really before that, but they knew those guys were probably leaving, so they sold off Nick Batum and got Gerald Henderson and Noah Vonleh back. So they went, rather than just go fully young, completely go kind of in the tank, which is, you know, kind of been the Philly strategy up to this point. They kind of played it almost in the middle ground, which is usually a lot of times, right, people get angry and say, you know, that's not the way to go if you're going to be, you know, the middle is death in the NBA, you know, it's kind of purgatory. So get out of there as quick as you can, even if that means bottoming out. But I think they went out, you know, made a couple smart signings. And then on top of that, they are letting their young guys play. You know, I mean, it's McCollum, Vonleh, Alan Crabb, who's been another really good surprise this year for them. Myers and Leonard, Mason Plumlee, who's really rebounded, kind of got that shine back that he had when he was a rookie. Those guys have all stepped up big time for them. So they're giving their young guys minutes and then supplementing them with some savvy vets around them like Aminu and Davis and Gerald Henderson, who's played pretty well for them off their bench all year. So it's really just been a nice mixture that they've put together.
Well, talking about the Pistons and the moves that they made, which, you know, really, really good moves. And it was kind of funny that they didn't have to ship off a first round to get Tobias Harris, but yet they gave the Rockets one. But we don't necessarily have to talk about that. But, I mean, if you look at Stan Van, you know, he pays a little bit too much sometimes. He probably paid a little bit too much for Harris, a little bit too much for Meeks, a little bit too much for Monta Yunus. And from a cap situation, how do the Pistons look moving forward?
So what they basically did this year was they used this summer space now. So they used the bulk of what they were going to have this summer to go and get Harris. They actually swung their maximum cap space, which is, you know, if they had kind of let all their free agents walk out the door and all that, by a little over $16 million. So it went down, you know, by, you know, getting close to a max contract amount. So they went out, they used this year's space, or excuse me, the summer space on Harris to get him now, which, you know, a lot of you're seeing some people are, you know, really praising that to go and get it. They kind of did something somewhat similar last year when they went out and got Reggie Jackson, knowing he was a restricted free agent. They wanted to have the ability to match on him and sign him. So they're still in a pretty good place. They, a little bit of a challenge. They still owe $5 million plus to Josh Smith to not even play for him next summer. So that's or next season, rather, and for a couple more years after that. So that's a little tricky. Jody Meek's not the best contract because he just hasn't been able to be healthy. But all around, they're not really carrying anything that's a, you know, albatross of a contract. They're actually in pretty good shape. They've got Marcus Morris is on, you know, ridiculous value. This coming season, he's only going to be $4.6 million, which for what he's given them is just, you know, crazy, you know, production for what they're paying for him. They've got Stanley Johnson, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope on their rookie deal. So they're in pretty good shape. They'll spend the bulk of the rest of their money that they've got this summer to re-sign Andre Drummond and potentially Mota Yunus. It looks like that's the path they're going to go, is try to get him to re-up. So that'll be where the rest of their money will go. So their roster's probably going to look pretty similar. But it's Stan Van Gundy's building the team he wants. He wants, you know, one true big with shooters around him, and then, you know, a lot of rim runs from the guards and the wings and kicking out to shooters, and Drummond basically cleaning everything up around. He's kind of rebuilding what he had when the Magic made that finals run.
Well, you couldn't see it, but Tim was shaking his head the entire time you were talking about Morris. Well, I guess since we're talking about Caps, were there any other teams that made trades around the deadline that you saw was definitely them just trying to have as much cap space this offseason as possible?
I want to know, are you going to put Miami in there? Because I think that the moves Miami made were just... Woo.
Speaking of, also, before we get off it, that Mota Yunus, I hope that comes back to bite the Rockets. I really like Mota Yunus.
Yeah, I've always liked his game too. So we'll see. It's just, problem is he going to be healthy?
The back injuries, yeah.
Yeah, and it's funny. I think that may have been almost more of a move for next year versus this year, because I just don't know that he's gonna give them much this year. But to your question, you know, Miami definitely. You know, they clearing, getting out of the tax and not being a tax repeater, and then kind of cleaning that up going forward. That's fantastic for them. You know, that was a great work. I think I heard somewhere it was almost $20 million in tax dollars they were going to have to pay out as a repeater, and now they're going to actually get money in because they've gotten under the tax. So, you know, good on them to get out of those deals. But, you know, near and dear to Tim's heart, I think Phoenix cleared things up a little bit. They got themselves almost $7 million by getting Morris out of there and picking up a couple guys and Blair and Humphreys. And I'll tell you, Ryan McDonough's had a little bit of a rough run, but getting that first-round pick, it's actually only top nine protected, I think it is, for Morris, that was fantastic.
That, you know, that being said, waking up and realizing that Chris Humphreys is on your team is heartbreaking, man.
Yeah, I'll tell you. So I know, I apologize. I do need to correct one thing because I took no shortage of grief from folks here in Orlando. Not actually a Magic fan. I'm actually a Celtics fan. So I heard it from both ends. So kind of where that ties in, trust me, I know all about having Chris Humphreys as a big part of it. I watched that for a while.
So. Hey, he's got a three-point shot now.
Yeah.
Yeah, supposedly. I mean, whatever, right? That's, Phoenix is doing what they should do the rest of this year. Play, you know, it just sucks that TJ Warren got hurt because I think they were going to give him absolutely as many minutes as he could have handled. And I actually like him. It's funny, I think of him as Tobias Harris, but better.
Oh, TJ Warren is great. I mean, that's been one of the hardest things about this season, or, you know, once we start tanking officially, is, yeah, Kevin and Justin have the luxury of watching their younger players really strive. And right now in Phoenix, it just seems like they're all, because due to injury, all they have are their really old vets who aren't a part of the core moving forward, and a bunch of D-League players on 10-day contracts to watch develop, yeah, that, you know, apart from Devin Booker.
Yeah, it's a, yeah, that's the, you know, bummer that he's going to be out the rest of this year. But, you know, so, but I think they did the right thing. You know, it's to try and clear things up a little bit and go back after. From all reports, they were close with LaMarcus Aldridge, right? They were, you know, kind of the bridesmaid once again, and not the bride. But it's definitely a place players to always talk about, as a place they like. You know, they've had a lot of success as an organization, so I think it's, you know, good for them to go there. Hopefully Warren can bounce back. Booker, obviously, he's kind of the coming out of the All-Star Saturday and all that. He's kind of, right now he's like the young darling of the league. Everybody's, you know, kind of crushing on him. So we'll see. I kind of like that Archie Goodwin. We're going to find out, is he a point guard? Can he be a point guard? You know, what is he? You know, force him to play minutes.
Hey, just so you know, the answer's no.
Yeah, that's kind of where I am. I don't think he's ever going to amount to much. I was a little surprised that they didn't trade Teletovich. I thought they would have.
Yeah, that was my big takeaway too. Was, you know, Teletovich, he's 30 years old. Even if you're selling a little bit cheap on him, getting a couple of second rounders for the guy, you know, what are they really going to do this summer? Are they going to, you know, pay him $15 million a year for the next 4 years so that they can have him not fit into their timeline? That was one of the big takeaways that really confused me. Because, I mean, weren't there had to have been suitors for Teletovich.
And the word was there were teams that liked him. The only thing that I heard kind of concretely around the league was they were really trying to get a late first or even a future, like a protected first that would roll, and that just wasn't going to happen. And then obviously they turned their focus on getting the Morris deal done, which came in pretty late in the day around the deadline. There was a supposedly kind of similar thing with PJ Tucker. A lot of teams are interested around the league in him.
You don't think they could have got a first round pick from Doc Rivers? Because it seems like he's just handing them out right now.
Yeah, the only thing is Doc only trades for guys who either played really well against him or played for him. So.
Right. Well, true.
So that's where Tucker, you know, that part doesn't work.
Well, so speaking of guys that have played with Doc Rivers this year, Lance Stephenson is now on his fourth team in the last 18 months. It seems like Memphis is going to keep him. But is the verdict out on Lance Stephenson? I mean, what can we reasonably expect from him after he's pretty much failed on two teams now?
Yeah, I don't think he's going to do anything in Memphis. I think he'll kind of play out the string, whether he plays minutes or not. I don't know that he's going to see anything meaningful minutes-wise. They've got kind of at the spots he plays. They've got Tony Allen, Matt Barnes, Vince Carter, James Ennis, PJ Hairston, Jordan Adams, who supposedly they want to give minutes to as soon as he's back and healthy. So I just don't think we're going to see anything from Stephenson. I really, my hope for him as a player is get out of there. Memphis almost assuredly isn't going to pick up that team option this summer. Let him be a free agent and go back to Indiana. You know, just go back there. You probably never should have left there in the first place. And just, I mean, talk about a fall. He's just gone from a, you know, really nice all-around player to now he's barely hanging around the fringes of the league. Couldn't even get minutes in with the Clippers when they were, you know, basically rolling out anybody at the small forward and shooting guard spot.
Yeah, definitely not a good look. You know, it seemed like that Los Angeles might be a spot to be. You know, it seemed like the perfect redemption spot with him coming off the bench, but yep. It just didn't work out. But, you know, you mentioned your team being Boston. And Boston, you know, we know Danny Ainge was active. He was flirting the idea of some big trade, but it didn't end up happening. But we know the story of Boston is they're a really nice team right now. They're third place in the East, one of the best defenses in the league. But the fact of the matter is, with all the first round picks they have coming up, namely the high one from Brooklyn, it seems like they're just going to run out of roster spots eventually. And we know a lot of these guys are free agents this year, Olynyk and Sullinger, just to name a few. I mean, what do you think Boston does as they move into the offseason to kind of clear some of this up?
Yeah, the Celtics cannot use all of the picks that they have. If the standings hold as they kind of look like they're going to, they're going to have 8 picks in this draft, 3 firsts and 5 seconds. So that's just ridiculous. No team can use that many. You can't stash that many guys over in Europe. I think one thing you're going to start seeing guys do, J.P. Tokoto did this to Philadelphia. They wanted him to go over to Europe, and he signed the tender So to force Philly to bring him to camp and then release him, so now he has his chance to pick wherever he wants to go in the NBA. Philly doesn't just control him and own him. I think you're going to see more young players do that. So that's why having 5 second-round picks is just, it's just silly. It's over the top. So the Celtics, they have to make some sort of consolidation trade, whether that be players and picks to get a better player and move that in, or really take that Brooklyn pick and go get, you know, somebody with it. Unfortunately, it looks like that pick's going to start going in the wrong direction for Celtics. Wishes, just the Suns look like they're going to stay in front of Brooklyn at this point, I would guess. Minnesota is not that far away. And Brooklyn's still playing. They're going out there. And I think you've got a bunch of guys now that they want to impress. You know, Sean Marks, new boss, new guy in charge. They're going to show that they want to be part of this and stick around. So I think Brooklyn's going to win a few more games than they might have otherwise. So, you know, we'll find out what happens with that pick, but they've got to do something. You can't just carry, you know, like you said, the roster's only 15 guys. You know, unless they make some kind of change where you can all of a sudden bring 20 guys into the active roster, you can't have that many players, and you can't have that many young players on the team. Reportedly, they weren't willing to talk any of the core guys. So Jay Crowder, Avery Bradley, Isaiah Thomas, Marcus Smart, in any kind of trades at the deadline. They only were willing to talk picks, some of the other pieces, to get that star to add to that core. I think eventually one of those guys is probably going to have to go for them to accomplish what they want. I think if Cleveland doesn't ultimately win the title, they'll make yet another run at Kevin Love this summer and see if they can get something done there. But they've got to do something, because on top of all the picks, they've also have a ton of cap space likely to come their way this summer. They're sitting right now at a potential max of over $53 million in cap space. So, and that's probably going to be kind of in that range-ish, probably closer to 40 once, you know, cap holds and picks settle in and all those kind of things. But, you know, so they're going to have the ability to add something else. So, but we'll see. I know a lot of Boston fans are dreaming, you know, maybe Kevin Durant considers the Celtics. I don't see it. I just don't see that happening. But they definitely, you're 100% right. Too many picks, you know, to hold on to. They've got to make a move here, and I think this summer is going to be big for them.
Is there any scenario in which Boston Celtics fans would be able to part ways with Jay Crowder?
I think it's really hard. he's one of the best contracts in the league. You know, he's for what he's given them. It's as any Boston fan will tell you, that's not the Rajon Rondo trade anymore. That's the Jay Crowder trade. And some of them, I think, are naive to even believe that he was the target all along there. But it's, you know, I mean, it's just the salary alone, you know, a little over $6 million next year, about $6.5 million or so the year after, tops out at only $7.8 million, you know, which is probably by the time we get there in the 2019-2020 season, that's probably going to be below the average salary in the league. It's just, you know, crazy the value that he's going to have on that contract. And he's kind of the stereotypical Boston, you know, the player that fans in Boston love. You know, he plays hard. He's willing to, you know, get up in the guy's face. He, you know, kind of, it's all out there. All of his emotions are, you know, out there for the world to see. So I it's going to be hard. You know, I heard some people saying, no way, don't go get Kevin Love if it's going to cost you Jay Crowder, which a year ago, if you were having that conversation, you would have thought people were insane. And now it's, you know, just people love the guy. He's, you know, probably, I would say at this point, he's probably the most popular guy on the team, even ahead of Thomas or Smart.
That is just absolutely incredible. But Keith, we thank you for joining us, man. Make sure you guys follow Keith Smith at Keith Smith NBA. We're going to get you out of here on one final question. And so every week we ask for mailbag questions, and Tim finds just whatever random picture he feels like finding. And so this week it was a tweet from Chipotle of their employees at that food safety meeting that they had to go to because of the E. coli outbreak. And I guess my question is, are you still planning to eat at Chipotle? Has that been changed at all by their E. coli outbreak?
Funny, this is probably sacrilegious. I've never actually eaten at Chipotle.
I'll be honest, I had it 2 days ago.
It's pretty overrated, man.
I've never had it. It's just kind of just happened. I work with a lot of folks who they swear by it. It's kind of, I don't know if you've ever heard about the Danny Ainge and his fascination with Chipotle. If you haven't looked this up, there's a whole story. I think Chris Forsberg wrote it. Apparently eats there 7 to 10 times a week.
Oh, wow.
Gosh.
Yeah, a lot of times lunch and dinner is Chipotle for him. So that's kind of crazy. So I guess, you know, I probably should show solidarity with my Boston friends there and, you know, go try it. But, yeah, it didn't make me more or less likely. I've never eaten there. So, you know, but it's probably at some point I'll give it a try. I tend to have a little bit of an iron stomach.
Well, the best thing about Chipotle is their cilantro lime rice, but you can find the recipe for that online. So just heads up, if you ever want to make anything that tastes like Chipotle, just throw cilantro lime rice in it and it tastes like you've eaten at Chipotle.
Nice, good to know.
So do you have, before we let you go, though, do you have any new articles or anything out?
So I spent a lot of time over the deadline. I wrote a lot of kind of almost instant reaction pieces to some of the bigger trades that went down. So those are all up on the Real GM site. They went up over kind of almost immediately as things were coming out trade-wise. So those went up. Part of that, I wrote a couple pieces on who is going to be buyers and sellers going into the deadline there. I did do before that, I had a couple, kind of everything obviously was a little trade related as we were kind of running a theme there, but I wrote two pieces on one on the 10 most tradable contracts, which really is kind of best value contracts type of thing. So that was a lot of fun to put together. And then on the flip side, the 10 least tradable contracts, or, you know, least amount of value. I get a lot of feedback, both friendly and nice, and not so friendly and not so nice on both of those pieces, as we always do with those. So those are a lot of fun. I'll be doing another look at the cap, so kind of the best and worst case cap situations, or scenarios rather, for every team in the league. That should go up here in the next week or so. And then after that, it's going to be a chance to really focus in on what's coming playoff-wise down the stretch, and then really looking forward to what I think is going to be a crazy, crazy summer, just with the amount of money that's available and moves teams are going to make, and likely everyone's either going to be chasing Golden State or San Antonio, it looks like, to try and make up that ground. So I think we're going to be in for what's going to be just a bonkers summer. So it'll be a lot of focus on getting ready for that.
Third time on the show. I think at this point we can officially call you a friend of the show. thank you so much for joining us. And as always, make sure that you add Keith on Twitter at KeithSmithNBA.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate it. Have a great day.
But you're listening to the Drivin' Dish NBA podcast. Kevin Rafuse, Tim Tompkins, Justin Kuzart. Follow us on Twitter at Drivin' Dish NBA. Why don't we switch gears? Let's do some mailbag.
Let's do it.
You've got mail.
Gather around, everybody.
Oh, boy.
All right, our first question for mailbags comes from Sky Chap on Instagram. He asks us, did the Raptors make the right choice not making a deal of the deadline? And do you think they'll be in the buyout frenzy and pick up a potential waived player? Like who?
It's really hard to judge. And that's because, frankly, none of us know what was offered. If they were offered something that wasn't very good, that wasn't a real replacement, that would have signified longer-term money. Damari Carroll hasn't come back. They were talking, then they'll get Damari Carroll back, you know, before the start of the postseason. So they were in talk with the Suns. If the Suns wanted a first-round pick for P.J. Tucker, you want P.J. Tucker, but you didn't want to give up a first-round pick. Right. You know, would any of the players they could have gotten made them legitimately have a much better chance of beating Cleveland?
Well, and you always have the worry, like, messing with the chemistry. Like, they're playing really well right now, and by adding a player, yes, in theory it might do better, but would it have messed with the chemistry too much? And, you know, and then maybe they lose in the first round of the playoffs again or something. Mm-hmm.
And,
so,
you know, Patrick Patterson being probably their biggest trade chip asset, he's a really big part of the team.
Yeah. So I don't think you can hate on a team for not making a move.
Well, especially if you don't know what they had to give up.
Well, it's the saying, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. The Raptors are playing quality ball right now. You know, I understand that, you know, I thought they would have been in the Keith sweepstakes, and they were the Thad Young sweepstakes if the price was right. But if, you know, if they didn't get the value, they're playing really well. They're second seed in the Eastern Conference right now. So if they're not going to tangibly improve this season, there's no point to mortgage anything necessarily just yet.
Well, and you know my stance is would the player you would have brought on made you better than the Cavs? That was my stance on it before and after the trade deadline.
And if the answer is no,
then maybe it's not worth it.
All right, so the next question comes from Sarah, who else on Facebook. She says, hi, guys. Awesome three-part podcast. Just wondering what your thoughts are on Howard and Whiteside. Looks like they're both going to leave their teams. Where do you think they'll end up? Also, what are your thoughts on Kentucky's Jamal Murray? I personally have a very high consideration of him and was wondering where your thoughts are. Keep up the good work.
Howard's a tricky one. Where do you find his value? What do teams want to play for an aging Howard
with back issues,
right? With back issues. Then again, there's going to be a lot of teams that, you know, frankly, part of the GM job is not just winning, but it's selling tickets. A lot of teams are going to have money this season, and a lot of teams are going to be able to offer Howard money. Howard's been rumored to want to go to Atlanta. You know, there's probably a few other destinations he might think about going to, but you know,
if Atlanta loses Al Horford too, it seems like that'd be a pretty logical replacement.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily saying it would be an upgrade at this point, but it fills the role for certain.
And sell some tickets.
Well, and so on the front of Jamal Murray, I haven't really seen too much from him because we talk about it all the time. We don't really watch college ball too much. But being here in Florida, we do have the Gators, and my roommate is a huge Gators fan. So we were watching that game when he dropped 35 on them. So then that was when he came onto my radar. And man, he's averaging about almost 20 points per game, about 5 rebounds, 2 assists. He's a freshman. For the Wildcats, man.
All right, well, I am watching Jamal Murray because I'm a Sixers fan, and that's what I have to do is watch guys I think we're going to draft. Jamal Murray's a nice player. I think he's going to be a decent pro. Realistically, I think he probably gets drafted. I mean, I could see him going as high as 4 this year. I mean, he's not, put it this way, he's not on that elite level like Simmons and Ingram. He's mm-hmm. kind of that tier below. I think he's a top 10 pick for sure. I think he probably goes around that 5, 6, 7 range. I think he's going to be a solid point guard. You know, I really like his athleticism.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he's necessarily a great shooter and it's going to light the world on fire. So I think that hurts him a bit, but I think he's a top 10 pick. I could see him going as high as top 5. But the other part of the question, you know, we mentioned Howard, you know, where do you guys think Whiteside could end up?
They're going to go to a team that has a whole lot of cap space and need somewhere to spend it. I mean, it's like the Ryan Anderson thing. Ryan Anderson's going to be a player that commands a lot of money. A lot of teams trying to hit that salary floor. So anyone with cap space, you know, the Lakers.
Yeah. The Lakers are actively trying to get rid of Hibbert.
Both who? Howard and Whiteside?
No. Well, not Howard and Whiteside, but like,
there's no chance Howard would ever go back
Whiteside
to LA.
And Anderson.
Yeah, I don't think Ryan Anderson fits in that timeline.
No.
I think the Pelicans
should keep him.
Much with the Suns really made a mistake by not trading Anderson. If you can't keep him or you don't want to keep him coming this offseason, you should have traded him.
Okay.
Especially if you aren't going to make the playoffs.
It's just all about value. But so the final question comes from B Christopher 001 on Instagram. He asks, Kobe played his last game against Tim Duncan last night. If you were starting a franchise and you could take one of these players as a rookie to be your franchise player, who would you take? And I guess this is the great debate of that generation of players. I have my answer, and I'm very convicted in it. So I'll let you guys go first, unless you want me to go first.
Yeah, go, by all means.
Oh, it's Tim Duncan. It's easily Tim Duncan for me. I mean, Tim Duncan has as many championships as Kobe does, so you can't use the winner argument against him. I mean, for me with Duncan, it's just all about the consistency.
We're talking
Duncan has been in the league for 20 plus years now. He's still an elite defensive player. From day one in 1997, he was a difference maker. He's won more MVPs than Kobe Bryant. He's won more finals MVPs than Kobe Bryant and probably got robbed out of a few more. I mean, we're talking about a guy who from his first year in the league has made his team a threat to win the championship every single year from basically 1997, including this year. Could very well get a 6th ring this year if all things go right. I mean, just you don't have the off the court headaches that with Duncan that you'd have with Kobe. You don't have to worry about him. The guy's the ultimate fit with anybody. You know, those free agent questions, a lot of them got answered this year when he fit with LaMarcus Aldridge and he fit with a guy like David Robinson, who's already a staple in San Antonio. And just there's something about the consistency that you get from Duncan and the longevity. So if you look at the arc of his career, I think you can make an argument that Kobe Bryant in his prime was maybe a more irreplaceable player than Duncan was. But I think for pure model of consistency, I'm taking Duncan every time.
Yeah, but See, my worry too, and this isn't a knock against Duncan, but you could argue a lot of Duncan's success came from the other two players he had, Ginobili and Parker.
And a lot, and you can argue that Kobe didn't win a championship without Shaq or without Pau Gasol. So, I mean, what does that mean?
Kobe was a threat everywhere. Like, you're not worried about Tim Duncan taking outside shots. You know what I mean? Kobe was everywhere on everything. And I get that's their just their positions that were they were playing. But
yeah, but Timmy dominated the paint. He's one of the best interior defenders in the league for 20-plus years.
But Kobe was one of the best offensive players
Kobe
ever.
Kobe was a great defender, too.
Forgetting
that.
No, like, I'm not taking away from Kobe Bryant. I just, for me, it's about the consistency with Duncan. I think I'm getting 20-plus years of Tim Duncan being incredible. And, like, again, I make the point, Tim Duncan has won more MVPs than Kobe Bryant. I mean, Tim Duncan elevates, like, let's not get it twisted here. Yeah, Tim Duncan had a lot of great players with him, but he was this, you know, he's the one who took David Robinson over the top. You know, David Robinson didn't win a championship until Tim Duncan got there. You know, up until maybe 07, I mean, and even 07, it's arguable. Duncan was the focal point on that offense all the time. Kobe, for the first three, you can make a very strong case that Shaq was the more important player on that team. Again, the last two, Kobe Bryant was definitely the guy. And I don't want to knock Kobe Bryant at all. Like, this is a very difficult decision. Like, and there are strong cases for both of these guys. I just, like, I believe Duncan is the better all-time player than Kobe is. Kobe kind of fell off the rails the last 5 years. I mean, what was the last truly great Kobe season? Maybe 2012? But with the injuries and with, you know, just some of the other issues off the court, I'm going to roll with Duncan.
I mean, yeah, I guess 2012 is the last time he really played a good amount of games, if you're looking at it that way. He hasn't played a full season since 2012, really.
Yeah, pre-injury.
There's never been a bad season with Duncan's Spurs. There have been bad seasons with Kobe's Lakers.
I don't know, man. I just feel like you have to go with Kobe, though. Kobe's that spark. He's that energy. And I'm not saying Tim Duncan isn't. I just feel like...
killer mentality.
Yeah. I don't know.
I mean, Kobe's a better closer than Duncan is, sure. Like, I think there's an argument there. And I think that Kobe can be that guy to truly take over a game. But I just think Duncan is so irreplaceable on both ends of the floor. But I don't know. What, Tim, you got to kind of break it here.
I don't feel good about going with either.
Who would you pick?
I mean, that's like...
Dude, you can't cop out on this question.
I mean, I guess if I were a GM, I'd go Kobe every time. If I were a coach, I'd go Duncan.
Oh, I guess. All right. Leave it to Tim to leave a confusing answer.
No, that's such a Bush League answer.
It's true.
Way to be strong in your convictions.
Well, I don't have to have a strong conviction about everything.
That's the question, though. You got to answer the question.
Kobe sells more tickets. Tim Duncan would be better to coach. Well, thank you so much for listening for this episode of the Drive and Dish podcast.
If you want to follow us on any social media, you can Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Feel free to look us up, Drive and Dish NBA podcast.
Yeah, the Instagram account's really been popping off too, man.
Shout out to the two guys hitting us up on Mailbag on our Instagram. We will also ask for mailbags there too if you want to hit us up there.
And of course, you can always go to our website, driveanddishpodcast.com, and you can send us a message. You can listen to older episodes there as well. And on Facebook, you can leave us a message there too. So hit us up.
I think we've done enough dancing for today. So why don't we dance Wednesday?
See you, Star Side.
Okay, well, I'm out of here.
Good to know.
Da-da-da-da-da. Hey! Da-da-da-da. Da-da-da-da-da. Hey!
Let's go while we're young.
All right. I think they get the point. Ha 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 ha